Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer.
And I'm Rebecca Green. Welcome to the WBOI News Roundup, looking back at the month of March. We'll begin at the Allen County Courthouse, where local high school students, educators, and public officials gathered for the National March for Our Lives event. Roughly 300 Northeast Indiana residents came out for the second rally against gun violence on the courthouse green in a month. Students, candidates, and elected officials spoke for more than an hour, making a call for change to federal gun laws. WBOI's Zach Bernard covered the event, and he joins us now. Welcome, Zach.
Thanks, Rebecca. Great to be here.
You've covered the student movement here for the last couple weeks, about a month, and you've covered it both at the high school and the college level. What are some things that you find interesting or different about this movement versus some of the other marches that we've had in the last year?
Well, I can actually speak to my own experiences in a way because I was a high school student during a number of shootings and there simply wasn't a response from a lot of us. And then it just seems as more and more time has passed, there's been more of a response. And the last shooting in Parkland seems to have spurned something, not just here, obviously, but nationally. March for Our Lives was a huge national movement as well. But the fact that it's reverberated here in Northeast Indiana, I think, is telling, not just among college students, but also high school students as well. And that's really what the March for Our Lives in Fort Wayne on March 24th was a gathering of high school students organized by high school students to just make the point, hey, we're tired of going to school and fearing something bad may happen to us today.
At the National March for Our Lives, there was kind of a combination of both the protests against high school shooting violence, but also kind of looping in some of the minority communities that have been particularly plagued by gun violence in the past, currently, every day. Mm-hmm. Did you see that here at the Fort Wayne March?
Yeah, I saw that at the not just March for Our Lives, but also the event that we had back in February. These marches were very similar, marches or rallies, whatever you'd like to call them, but they were very similar in nature. And what they did seem to do was try to cover the spectrum, race, equity gaps that may exist in coverage. And it would appear, at least, that the March for Our Lives event was very well represented as far as demographic was concerned.
The Young College Democrats and some of the other groups have some other rallies and marches planned, some meetings planned. Is this something that there's going to be, do you think the momentum is going to stay up, or are things starting to kind of taper off a little bit?
Well, the fact of the matter is, if people keep talking about it, then the momentum keeps going, doesn't it? And that's kind of what seems to be happening here. We've seen a number of instances. I think it was after the Orlando nightclub shooting a couple of years ago, we had a big rally for unity downtown, and then a couple other instances happened, and then we had another rally, I think, the year after that. But this one seems a little bit more sustained, and I think it's because the individuals that are leading these rallies or marches or just events that are taking place, they're pretty much fed up with it, and they don't like the fact that gun violence is a thing that continues to happen, especially in places like schools or public facilities. And it just seems like the individuals who are behind this locally don't seem to want it to die down.
Do you think the fact that it's a hot political season has anything to do with it?
I'm sure it has something to do with it. Most of the individual advocates that you'd speak to who are organizing these events would be the first to say that this isn't a political issue to them. However, we all know how narrative works and how politics works, and we all know that whatever is the hot discussion item of the day is going to rule that political season. And given the fact that we have an election season coming up in just a few months, actually, that's going to probably make a difference, especially, you know, you don't want to see it, but if there is another instance of tragedy that were to happen between now and then, you can certainly imagine there will be some platforming one way or the other related to guns.
Zach, you've done a great job covering these marches and rallies, and I thank you very much for coming into the studio to talk to us today.
It's always a pleasure, Rebecca. Thank you.
There were many demonstrations this past month to protest gun violence. The March for Our Lives events were the largest gatherings, but they didn't overshadow what students did on March 14th, 1 month after the Parkland shooting. It was a day of walkouts and other protests, sometimes endorsed and sometimes discouraged by school administrations. We heard from students all over the state when we put together a weekend news roundup. Bernadette Becker, co-host of that podcast, has some of the highlights. Bernadette, welcome to WBOI Presents.
Thank you, Ben.
Some of the student protests weren't actually walkouts, but school-wide events like assemblies and times of prayer. Who were some of the students speaking out in this way?
Bloomfield Junior Senior High School was one that opted to have a school-wide assembly, including 17 empty chairs, to impart to students that violence can happen anywhere. Malia Toon, a junior, says it's a reminder that what happened in Parkland could happen here.
Imagine having 17 people out of our school gone. Now you can. In front of me, there are 17 empty chairs. Have you noticed anyone missing today?
Bloomfield student leaders made their message more personal by pulling 14 students and 3 teachers out of class to help make real the magnitude of the lives lost in Parkland. At Bethany Christian, most of the student body gathered for songs, prayer, and words from organizers. Concordia Lutheran High School held an event of prayer and remembrance, with some emergency personnel attending as well.
The gun violence issue is an impactful one, especially for students who, like Malia Toon in Bloomfield, are looking at Parkland and going, that could have been me. What were some of the messages from students, and who were they directed towards?
We heard from students in a lot of communities, but I'd like to highlight 2 here. In South Bend, Washington High School students sent a message against both national and local gun violence, walking out into the cold to honor those who died at Parkland and in South Bend as a result of gun violence. Here's what Washington senior Lorraine Davidson said.
Because it's not just about those kids that died in Florida, not saying that the deaths don't matter, because they do. But we need representation in our community as well. It doesn't make sense not to honor those people that died in our community to gun violence, the same gun violence that happened in Florida.
Hundreds of North Central High School students in Indianapolis chose to participate in the walkouts, chanting and holding signs demanding change. North Central High School student Isaac Weber says the Parkland shooting has made him afraid to come to school.
Walking in to school from the parking lot, and you're worried and you're looking around, and we shouldn't have to do that. Like, if school is something that we need to go to, it should be a low-risk activity, you know, not something potentially deadly.
Not every school administration offered support for student protests. Some students faced discipline if they participated in a walkout event or other demonstrations. How did these situations play out?
Some schools made this nationwide protest an educational experience about the consequences of activism, such as Southwest Allen County Schools, where students were penalized if they participated in the walkout. Vigo County Schools in Terre Haute held an assembly for students, but allowed students to walk out with the knowledge they would be subject to disciplinary consequences. Many students were not deterred by detention and walked out anyway.
And any more locally?
In the NACS schools, students were penalized for walking out, and instead of holding a school assembly or memorial, officials decided to encourage students to do a walk-up. WBOI's Zach Bernard interviewed NAACS spokesperson Lizette Downey to get a sense of what exactly NAACS was calling for.
Walk up to the kid who sits alone at lunch. Invite them to sit with you. Walk up to the kid who sits quietly in the corner. Smile and say hi. Walk up to the kid who may be disruptive and ask him how he's doing. You know, walk up to teachers and staff and say thank you. Walk up to someone who has a different view than you and get to know them.
Bernadette Becker, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ben.
The walk up, not out response to the student protests drew some criticism from survivors of the Parkland shooting and others who see it as victim blaming. You're listening to WBOI Presents. Some have said the U.S. is experiencing an epidemic of gun violence. It's not the only epidemic Hoosiers are dealing with. In March, we heard from several reporters from Indiana Public Broadcasting and Side Effects Public Media, who had updates on the opioid epidemic.
When the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issues a report on the number of overdoses in the U.S., it is only as good as the data states send in. This year, the CDC reported that overdoses from opioids, such as prescription painkillers or heroin, jumped nearly 30% in 2016. More than 42,000 people died. But those are the deaths the CDC can definitively say were opioid-related. As Jake Harper of Side Effects Public Media reports, the real number could be much higher.
So we are going back to what we call our receiving area.
Alfie Ballou is deputy coroner for Marion County, Indiana, and she oversees death investigations. When someone dies, an investigator from Ballou's office looks for clues.
We're going to look in that whole area where they were found. We're going to look in cabinets to look for syringes or other drug paraphernalia, such as pipes, rolled up dollar bills, straws.
Items that could point to drug overdose as a possible cause of death. But to really know for sure that someone died of an overdose, investigators need to test bodily fluids. Blue shows me inside a walk-in refrigerator where they store samples from people who have died. Blood and urine and the fluid inside the eye, known as vitreous.
We send that off to a toxicology lab to be tested for what we call drugs of abuse. Some prescribed drugs, definitely opioids, illicit drugs, cocaine, heroin, meth.
When all that information is in, the coroner fills out a death certificate. And if it's an overdose, they'll put that as the cause. But death investigators around the country don't always list the specific drugs involved. And that really matters. Christopher Room is a professor at University of Virginia, and he's published two papers on this topic recently.
In some cases, they're classifying it as a drug death, but they don't list the kind of drug that was involved.
If you don't specify that an opioid or cocaine or meth contributed to someone's death, that information isn't captured by the state or the CDC. And because of that, we are undercounting opioid-related overdoses across the U.S. Room says that big number from the CDC, 42,000 opioid-related overdose deaths, that number should be nearly 50,000. Indiana's count is especially off. Room estimates that the state's opioid overdose rate was actually twice as high as what the CDC reported in 2014.
There are other states that do very well. I mean, there are some states that have pretty much 100% reporting.
He says a major factor is who investigates deaths. In some states, like Indiana, every county has a coroner. Coroners are usually elected. They may not be medical professionals or trained to put specific information on death certificates. Other states have medical examiners, who are doctors. In some cases, there's a chief medical examiner for the whole state.
States that have centralized oversight with medical examiners tend to do better than those with coroners.
Another problem is that death investigators don't always test bodily fluids. Brad Ray is a researcher at Indiana University's School of Public and Environmental Affairs. Why are some coroners doing this and not others?
The cost is kind of the main thing that I've heard anecdotally. But the other is they're not required to, right? So if you're not required to pay for it and you're not required to report it, then why would you? So we need to change that.
Indiana lawmakers passed new rules this year to fix this. Starting in July, coroners will have to run tox screens for suspected overdoses and report the results to the state. And the state will help cover the added costs. More accurate data will likely make the opioid problem look worse as the numbers go up. But Ray says that could help the state access federal funds and keep better track of drug problems.
So we can see when trends are happening. We can see when there tends to be increases in cocaine and meth and decreases in opioids if that happens.
Alfie Ballou's team was already getting tox screens for suspected overdoses. But it wasn't until she went to a conference last year that she realized they need to include more information on death certificates. Now her team will list specific drugs.
So we'll say drug overdose or drug intoxication with... And then we identify the drugs. So if it's five drugs that have caused or contributed to the death, then we put those five drugs down.
Blue plans to teach other coroners to do it the same way. Jay Carper, SideFX Public Media.
We also heard from Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barb Anguiano. The city of South Bend announced it will join dozens of other cities across the country, including Fort Wayne and Allen County, and file a federal lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors, alleging misinformation about the effects of opioids. Mayor Pete Buttigieg says the lawsuit sends a simple message. Someone needs to be held accountable for the damage opioids have caused.
Part of it's just making sure that we get to the bottom of what happened through the justice system, through the courts, to hold anyone accountable who did actual wrongdoing.
Coming up, we'll be joined by former Ambassador and Representative Tim Romer regarding his new work with Issue One, a bipartisan political reform organization.
And later in the program, we'll also sit down with Mark Hagar and Devante Beckham, organizer and one of the speakers from the recently held TEDx Fort Wayne. Stay tuned.